This week on the Reflex Blue Show with Nate Voss and Donovan Berry, Jim Sheridan of Hatch Showprint. Okay, hi, and I'm Nate Voss, and this is the Reflex Blue Show. And who are you?
Donovan Berry.
We're back in Seward, Nebraska. We're back at Concordia University.
You gotta give Paul Berkbigler here big props.
Big thanks to the professor who... Fans keep clamoring to have him back on the show in all of his multiple layers and layers of intellect as well as clothing. And so you know, maybe someday we'll make that happen. But today, thanks to the university here at Concordia in Seward, we're happy to welcome Jim Sheridan to the show from Hatch Showprint. Did you see the double show I did there? That was nice.
Oh, nice.
Well, Jim, welcome. How are you doing this morning?
Very good. Good morning, and thanks for having me on the show, Nate and Donovan.
Hey, no problem. We went out and had a little breakfast before the show.
Great.
That was nice. That was a good time. That was good food.
Very good food. The waitress was fantastic. I asked her how long she'd been awake, and she stumbled three words out. About 20 minutes now.
Yeah. She was surprisingly on her game.
Jim here is kind of a star around even these parts, even though he's been here a day, because we show up at the cafe and they're closed.
Yeah.
Jim shows up, and the lady all of a sudden just appears out of nowhere and opens the door.
I know.
It was because I was on the wrestling team in Western Kansas in the mid-70s, and they still remember that.
Yeah.
Those golden locks.
Nice.
Wow.
Nice.
So you stopped in town, you gave a presentation last night about the Hatch, about the Showprint shop. And I would like to launch right into it. We were there in September doing our old show.
And he was wise enough to get out of town.
You were coming and took off. But we did stop by the shop and talk. Who, you said his name a minute ago. Well, it wasn't a minute ago now, but the guy that we talked to.
Brad Vetter is one of the several people that I would call an incredible, great staff that I have there working at the shop. Very imaginative, but... It's a mostly gal staff. That's okay with me, but Brad is there as well, and he helps with a lot of the different heavy things around the shop. And I guess you guys must have been very, very heavy because he talked to you too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Donovan's I think I might be heavier now.
It might have actually been just because Bennett was with us.
Could be. But anyway, he showed us around, and he just touched a little bit while he was showing us around. He touched a little bit on. Sort of the state of Hatch Showprint before you came on board and the directions that you took it, because as I understand it, Hatch wasn't doing so hot. I mean, everyone looks at Hatch now. It's this incredible place that's been doing incredible work for years and years and years now with this great archive, but it wasn't always really that way. I mean, it was always doing the work, but... The perception of it wasn't certainly what it is today. So, could you tell us a little bit about what you did when you showed up and how you made all that happen?
Well, first of all, before I give you that interpretation of the early '80s, I'd say first that I needed that shop as much as that shop needed somebody like me. And with that being said, I was shown the shop because I had what I call a rinky-dink art show in a rinky-dink restaurant. Of my own wood blocks and lintel cuts that I did after graduating from MTSU. During getting my degree at MTSU, but I graduated with English and history minors and majors. And this figures into the answer of your question. But I fell in love with printmaking because I was carpooling with a perfect stranger. And I said, man, I just want to get out of college with a degree. My girlfriend's in school, and I need to do something, so what's easy? And he said, man, I'm in printmaking. That seems pretty simple. So I said, man, I'll take it. So I went to class, and I was loaned $40 for my printmaking supplies. Those were the ultra poor, poor, poor days. And I did fall in love with printmaking. So what you got is this guy that is 26 years old, graduating from college, English major, history minor, and 9 hours of printmaking. No senior show, no graphic design classes. But I'm introduced to this incredible old shop called Hatch Showprint that even as a Nashvillian since 77, I had never heard of. And I was as impressed as I am today with the heritage and the history of that incredible archive down there that You could see Hank Williams' copper plate leaning next to a Bessie Smith order, next to a Patsy Cline magnesium plate, next to Elvis Presley's Restrike, and all of these things in between. And it was important to me to keep it together under one roof. They were, in my words, they were gurgling blood. They should have been spilling more ink. They were losing so much money. And I didn't want to see it in flea markets and antique stores.
Now, you actually were originally hired to just go in there and document the history of it?
Yeah, to start making photo plate documentation of the 4x4 postcards. But I love the history. Really, the meat and bones of who these entertainers were, because visually it was spectacular to go into the shop that you guys never saw that was torn down in 1992. But the bottom line is, you keep a place like this around by paying for itself, by making sure that it doesn't lose money.
Right.
And that was our goal, to get it to a break-even level where we could make sure that the owners or committee or museum, that whoever had it, could say, you're doing great. We're blessing you with another year. And as a division now, as a nonprofit division of the Country Music Hall of Fame there in Nashville, they're very grateful that we're able to return the favors extended to us.
Now, the thing I noticed, that because you're a nonprofit, like, anyone can just walk in there and take a tour at any time. Is that part of being attached to the nonprofit?
That's a misnomer. If you want to say that you guys got a tour, I'm glad you were able to get that. But we don't offer organized tours. I'm a sucker, though, for school groups. We have an extensive intern program, but no gray line tours, nobody can call up and say. Yeah,
but anyone can just walk in the lobby and buy posters.
That's not a tour.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a tour of the front, like.
Oh, I just thought. Oh,
10
I guess.
By 20 area.
This is a good thing we had Bennett with us then. We got a lot more than we would have.
Must have been. Yeah, don't go spreading that rumor out there. No, you just show up to Hatch. They'll take you in the back. They'll just start giving you posters.
I didn't get any posters.
You guys don't just give posters, and there were.
But there were plenty to buy. I bought a lot.
Well, unfortunately, I watched Cartoon Network, and so the Adult Swim posters that you guys did a couple years ago I can remember the placement is very high up on the wall of posters. But
just higher than Nate's little greedy hands could get to.
Higher than my chubby little fingers could grab.
But that's a good indication as to the variety of the clientele that we have now.
Yeah.
So we're doing this interview third week of March in 2008, and I know that we just shipped out all of Willie Nelson's tour posters for Europe. We just finished doing Continental Tour for Neil Young in the United States and in Europe. We're working on the new designs for CNN for the upcoming presidential conventions, and I'm sure there's a baby announcement or two in there. Lord knows what else we're doing.
Now, any band can still walk in and just give you a poster to do, or do you guys take orders over the counter?
We take orders over the counter. We used to do a lot more of that. We don't take email orders because I still don't have faith in that cyber world out there. So you got to fax us the order.
Funny story about that, and I'll back it up, because I think a lot of our listeners, being that they're digitally dialed in just to get the show, would be like, that's crazy talk. This old-fashioned nonsense. But, no, I did place an order to get my car fixed and did it online and didn't hear back from them, called, set up an appointment, and then seriously, like, 3 or 4 days ago, and I got the car fixed last month, 3 or 4 days ago, they were like, hey, we just got this email in that you need to have your car fixed. When can we take care of that for you? And I was like, yeah, you actually already did that, so... So I'll back you up that sometimes, reasons, that doesn't always
It's
work.
A good thing I stepped up to this modern fax technology just last week. Actually,
I know.
I just got a fax machine.
I actually made fun of him for getting a fax machine last week. So that, anyway.
Maybe we should allow text messaging your order in.
Yes.
I'm not up to that yet.
SMS.
I still don't do that.
But we get to typeset exactly how the message came in.
Yeah, the other thing I want to ask you about is this book. Now, you're an English major. You sent in a document, the thing, and it only took you, 17 years to actually publish the book.
I know that's you're being kind when you say that. I started immediately.
The book looks great. I mean, anything that takes long. I mean, it looks that good. I don't care.
Right there.
Yeah.
I'm going to get back to all that stuff that I took in college. And it was me, but let's just say someone like me could have done it as well. But all of those interests that I was telling you about, the writing aspect, having a visceral appreciation of history, having some sense of cognitive visual skills was each one of those were as important as the other when I started running that place in 1984. And again, I'll say how grateful I was to be given that opportunity because, man, if you would have seen my hair and my beard and the quality of the tie that I wore to that interview, I wouldn't have hired my son either. But all of these things played a part in it. So I think my point is I had just finished 21 hours of school, pretty much living in my car, but writing all these papers, and I got extra money by working in the art history lab and the special collections library. So I was, especially the art history lab, I was thinking how cool it was to have slides of everything, man. And because I was the guy that documented them and pulled them out for the teacher. And that wasn't lost to me at all. So when I got this job at Hatch, after trying to get it to a break-even level and leaving for 10 months and coming back and being asked to run it as an archive, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. You start documenting immediately. You start interviewing the old folks that are still around that were young folks when they worked at Hatch.
You talked to the lady who claims she actually named the shop?
Yeah, May Cook Fulton. Yeah, she was a hoot. She was here's a perfect May Cook Fulton joke. So imagine with me, you're running this old poster shop and it's in downtown Nashville and the adult stores are there, and she pulls up in her Chrysler, and she always pointed out this is the first time she didn't own a Cadillac, and she saunters in and she's choked with jewelry. She did very well in life with a trailer company, which is why we have all these great trailer.
Yeah, after she left, she became a
She became a client, and she was always very feisty and colorful, to say the least. So she came in one day and wanted to tell me a joke, and this sizes May Cook Fulton up perfectly. So here's the joke. So there's this middle-aged lady, and she's admiring herself nude one day in the middle of the afternoon in her full-length mirror in the bathroom. And her husband walks in and says, what are you doing looking at yourself naked in the mirror in the middle of the afternoon? And the wife replies, well, I've just been to the doctor for my physical, and he said that I have the figure of a 20-year-old woman. And the husband torts back, well, did he mention your big fat ass? And the wife says, no, your name didn't come up.
Nice. Real good.
So this lady's like 90 telling me this joke. And
that's
then she,
awesome.
She chuckles and, you know, hits me on the arm. So that was May Cook. So yeah, I interviewed her immediately. And then Charlie Shelton, who was Mr. Hatch's nephew. And we think that these are all ancient people. And while Mr. Hatch died in 1952, his nephew and grandnephew and nieces are still around and are about my age living in Nashville. So we're not that far away. I will say, though, that I'm impressed that no one documented anything in that shop. There are no pictures of a day at Hatch in, like, say, 1928, 34, 45. There's no pictures of the guys on 4th of July, nothing like that. And that's why I think it's so important to document just whatever we're doing on some particular
day. And you've actually really brought back the history. I mean, you got Colonel Tom Parker back in the shop.
He was another hoot, yeah.
Yeah, Donovan was telling me a little bit about that just on the drive down here, but it's kind of so what had happened is you had started reprinting the Elvis posters, and I think he got in touch with you guys about some event he was having.
He was going to put some Elvis posters in his Las Vegas exhibition window out there, and he had his number one man Tom Diskin call me, and I was just being courteous, but I was going to charge him $6 a poster. And there's this long silence, and Parker got on the phone, and he actually wanted to meet the guy that was going to charge him $6 a piece for Colonel Tom Parker and Elvis Presley poster. So there's a lot of stories like that. And as I'm listening to you guys, and I know you're fascinated with those old guys and those old stories, but here's what I would say to that. Remember, it was a poster company in the South at a time when American entertainment was ever evolving and changing. And these are very colorful people that were their clients there. And it could be a vaudeville, circus, carnival, minstrel show. The letters that we got during the Depression as to the imaginative ways that they were coming up with reasons why they couldn't pay their bills are spectacular. But, I mean, it is, oh, brother, where art thou, every day back then. and they're still alive because we wanted to capture the essence of those customers. And I'm very firm about saying I don't want to put meat on the bones of that history and those colorful clients and catch them while I got them. And so I was glad that I was still thinking like an English major and a history minor student when I started that job down there.
Well, where do you see, now that we've talked a little bit about the history, where do you see the future of Hatch? And what is the future of letterpress?
Well, I never dreamed we would be this busy. It's surpassed any wildest dreams. And I think that because we're the antithesis of digital design, that's made a big impact on where we are now and why people enjoy coming to the shop. And it's the granddaddy of letterpress in the United States, and that's not lost on me also. And I'll always say I'm humbled by the history of that shop, and it keeps you centered and focused when you're walking around all of these entertainers whose careers have risen and fallen. And I think that's how I would answer your question, is to better document the heritage of the shop. Once we got busy, we really haven't been able to look back in the last 15 years, and there's still stuff in boxes that we need to get on shelves.
Well, and I've got a kind of a question off that. One of the things that's pretty prevalent in design today, if you look over, you know, the large scope of American design, you see, and I think it's less prevalent now, but it was certainly very prevalent around the turn of the millennium there, the sort of Hatch style being aped by other designers. I'm seeing less of that now, and it's, you know, if you want the original, go to the originator. How far in advance, if I was a design shop and I said, you know, I've got a project here, this would be something perfect for Hatch to take on, like, how far in advance does someone have to get in touch with you just to get in the mix, just to have a job go through you guys with how busy you are? I mean,
there's three different ways to answer that. One way would be to ask you how many posters are you going to get. If you're going to get a 500 quantity plus, because that goes on a different press with a different pressman, and I would probably end up being the guy that designed it myself, or maybe someone else, we could probably slam that out in 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, okay.
If you were a band from Lincoln, let's say that you wanted 100 posters for a festival that you know that you're going to be playing at.
And you could get a hold of a fax machine.
And you can get a hold of a fax machine. We still get, you can still hear that at the end of the line when we say you got to fax it in. The average turnaround time now is about 5 weeks. That's... 4 weeks also. If you were a design company from a little town or a big town and you gave us a deadline, then we would try to work to fit that deadline. So there's so many different ways to look at the knothole of scheduling.
Do you get a lot of calls like that from design firms, or is it mostly more direct to clients, say promoters getting in touch with you guys? You mentioned the CNN thing, which I would imagine they have a marketing department the size of Chicago.
A little of everything. Ad agencies could call us. It could be designers that are working for a specific branding that they're thinking that we could contribute to. It could be the manufacturer themselves. It could be the promoter, if you're talking about an entertainer, or the agent, or the venue. So many different ways to do that. It could be, every now and then, it's the entertainer, him or herself. And a lot of them you would know, some of them you wouldn't. And I'd also like to stress that we do truly treat every customer equally, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or a Bruce Springsteen sound-alike band. They're both
Now, your employee there told us, though, or maybe it was Bennett, that the minute a poster comes up for like a concert at the Ryman, though, you guys fight over which designer gets to do it.
That's not actually true. There's no fighting in the shop at all. But you can call it however you want to say. You can say, I'd like to do that poster. If you're Mary Sullivan and you're a jazz enthusiast, you would want to do it. You would probably do a better job for the Herbie Hancock poster. If you're Brad Vetter and Sigur Rós or David Gray or Van Morrison is playing, you'd probably do a better job. If it's Neil Young, I probably would enjoy trying to step up to the plate, put the telephone down, and design that thing. And so we all have our favorites, but we'll will do a good job on anybody's poster.
Yeah, and actually the reason Bennett got us the full tour, I guess, is because he actually, you guys have a lot of like interns there where they come in. Bennett actually worked for you for like a week.
Yeah, it's a strong intern program, and that's important to me because I was raised in a household where education was important, and while I don't think I could do the straight and narrow of a collegiate professorhood, what do you want to call it? I don't think I could be a professor on tenure, because I would probably fall too far away from the envelope, and I would probably raise too many eyebrows. So that's a long way of saying that this job has kept me personally in between the ditches, and the way that I can be of service to the academic world is by going to universities, trying to do a very good job, bring some jokes with me, a lot of low price posters, and try to preach the gospel of letterpress.
So. And how does someone go about becoming an intern if they want to check out the shop and help you out?
Send a fax. That's very good, Nate. Starts with a handwritten letter, and then one of the folks down there will help schedule you, and they fill up pretty fast. I know that we're probably full up to the fall already this year.
Yeah, because you came out to my college, and I think we decided that was in 2000. Yeah. Did a little workshop there and gave a great presentation. You just did one here at Concordia last night. I don't believe there was a workshop involved in that, but I mean, how often do you get out to colleges around the country?
I try to get out 10 to 12 times a year.
Available for booking now. Send a fax. Do it. Hey, Donovan.
Actually, we want to ask him, while we're talking about students, we always try to ask our guests if you have any tips for the students.
Yeah, get a summer job in a printing company. That's the biggest tip I can give. Because if your portfolio is the same as the guy or gal next to you, and they're both really good, and I'm sitting behind the desk there at Leo Burnett, and I don't know which one of you two to clowns to hire, but I see one has been working summers in a print shop, and the other one has, let's say, is a DJ. I would hire the one that has experience in the print shop, because they're going to know what happens to the product once it hits ink.
See, I would agree, but I would agree basically because I worked at a print shop in college.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't do any printing, but just talking to the printers, you learn so much just on like how ink lays on ink.
And I would think as a designer in your digital world that you would want to be interested in Herb or Wanda, whoever is going to print this masterpiece that you've created. Wouldn't you really want to know how their kids are doing on the soccer team or how mom's feeling? And you get it. You know, there's a person that's actually going to be producing this piece. So I would think that you'd want to have a not only a cerebral interest in it, but a spiritual interest in and a technical interest in how this is going to look when it's done. And that goes past just a cursory press check.
Yeah, that's nice.
If you know what size paper comes in the box from the mill, you'll know to use all of that paper.
Well, even just working there.
An expert.
Well,
in
you
that.
Know, you just learn that what kind of questions you ask a printer when you say what size the sheet size and the margin
and
you
they
need.
They appreciate your intelligence, man. Yeah. Really, they really do. You're right on it, Donovan. Yeah, that's the strongest advice that I could give. And I think not being shy of communication, and I'll also stress that courtesy should still be alive as we prod through this 21st century. Courtesy should go a long way.
So several tips in there.
And speaking of courteous, this is the first guest you've actually told in advance that he was going to be. We're going to have a pop reflex round quiz.
I was explaining what the show was going to be like to Jim at breakfast this morning, and I accidentally let it slip that we have what we like to call the reflex blue round, which is, as we've described, it being that we used to call it the reflex blue round on the old show, which was not called the reflex blue show. So now we have what we call a double hit, which, as we've determined, takes a lot longer to dry.
All right. Your first name's Jim, so we're going to go Jim Morrison, Jim Belushi, or Big Jim Slade.
Jim Morrison.
Sorry, wait, now, do we take that?
I always say Rockstar always wins in battles of names.
Okay. I'll go ahead. Judge will accept Jim Morrison.
He wouldn't take Jim Belushi, though.
We would have also accepted Big Jim Slade, but we cannot, unfortunately, accept Jim Belushi. John Belushi we could take, but Jim...
There you go.
We can't do that. Okay, next.
Since you're working at Hatch Show Print, we're talking about hatching here. The chicken or the egg?
Which came first?
I think the chicken came first.
Donovan, you had a spectacular
supposedly answer to this. The scientists, when they released Chicken Little on DVD, claimed that the egg came first because whatever laid it wasn't a chicken, but when it hatched, it was a chicken. So, according to evolution, the egg came before the chicken.
Is that the cartoon version of evolution?
It might have been because it was based on a cartoon DVD release.
I love that
DVD
you're getting
release.
It from the Chicken Little DVD.
I like how they promote the movie based on having scientists discuss this question.
There's really no answer. I'm going to give that one to him because there's no such thing as an answer to that question. So I have an Adult Swim trivia question for you. The character of Brack, and I believe you did a Brack Show poster, was originally a part of which other Adult Swim show?
Josie and the Pussycats.
Sorry, Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Whoops.
All right. So we got two.
Now you're from Kansas.
Yes.
Since you're from Kansas, what's their best song?
Home on the Range, of course, is the state song, but their best
I'm talking
song
the band,
would be
Kansas.
Dust in the Wind, man.
Yeah, that's Dust what the judge takes.
And that's no lie. That is on the sheet as the answer.
Yeah, Carrie Livgren wrote it.
All right, and then the last one we have is, since you are used to these plates, they're all printed in reverse. Everything. Are you able to draw in reverse because of this?
On.
All right. We want to know.
That's reverse of no. On.
Oh, nice.
Oh, you already like
even
we're sitting here.
He
we're
even
like
speaks in reverse.
We're like, what?
Well, we want to see if you can if you know how to speak in reverse and forward at the same time. Which means, can you name five palindromes?
No. 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 And no.
There you go.
Was that on five times?
It depends on if you're looking in the mirror.
I think he's playing games with us. But actually, I did want to ask you, though, this isn't part of the thing, but has Elvis ever been in the shop?
I've never met Elvis Presley, but I think it's really too bad that he never got help in his addiction.
Has he been by recently?
He is often on the corner, but his clothes are looking tattered. I think that if he had a day job, he'd be cooking pancake batter. If you stumble to the river and look into the stream, you'll see that we're all Elvis, and all of us should scream.
Nice.
That
but with that, I think
so
we're,
much
we're,
more
we're
profound
out of here.
Than I am used to dealing with on this show. I just have to take a moment. Okay.
Well, thank you once again for being on the show. It was a great pleasure.
Fantastic.
Jimmy, you've been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time, having breakfast, and having a fantastic show.
Anyone else, you can leave your comments at 36point.com.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you next week. And thanks again to Professor Paul Burke Bigler and Concordia University for having us and Jim out again. To send questions or comments to The Reflex Blue Show, please visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show is hosted by Nate Voss and Donovan Beery, music produced by Dust Lab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.